Welcome to the College of Psychic Studies Tuesday evening lecture series. Tonight, Tuesday the 21st of May 2002, we have Martin Brofman giving a talk entitled The Body Reflects Consciousness.
My story began in 1975. I was working on Wall Street designing computer systems and not very happy, but I thought this is the way life is. Things started happening in my body. My right arm became paralyzed. My legs became spastic. And I went from one doctor to another. Nobody seemed to know what the problem was. Finally, they told me I had a blockage in my spinal cord between the fourth and the seventh cervical vertebrae. And they explained that as that was growing, it was pressing the spinal cord against the inside of the spinal canal. And they told me I had to have an operation immediately, and if I lived through the operation, then I might come out a quadriplegic. So I had to deal immediately with the possibility that, well, I was about to die. I went for the operation, and afterwards waited for the good news from the doctors. And they said, well, we couldn't get to the tumor. It was inside the spinal cord. To get to it, we would have had to cut the spinal cord. That would not be a good thing. So I said, okay, what do we do now? Chemotherapy, radiation? They said, go home. I said, what do you mean, go home? They said, well, nobody has written the book on spinal cord tumor surgery, and we can't use radiation because we would burn the spinal cord, and we can't use chemotherapy because there's not enough of a blood supply to the inside of the spinal cord. So I wanted to make sure what they were saying. I said, well, are you telling me that this is terminal? They said, yes. You expect me to die from it? Yes. How long do I have? And they said, well, maybe 1 or 2 months, unless you cough or sneeze, and then you might die immediately. So, well, something like that catches your attention. And it wakes you up. And I had to look at things in a very practical way. I said, well, what they're telling me is maybe I have 1 hour to live. So what do I want to do during that 1 hour? If I'm going to spend that hour feeling bad about my condition, I will have wasted the rest of my life. So it didn't make sense. I thought I might as well find something to feel good about. Oh, look at the beautiful color on the walls, or gee, what a nice leaf. Just anything to improve the quality of my life. And I went out to be terminally ill and experience life. It was interesting for me because when I was told I was about to die, I went through the stages that people go through when they're told that. Denial, this isn't happening, this isn't real, I'm on a television set or something, and well, let's make a deal, we can talk this over, let's negotiate, and eventually I reached the stage of acceptance, accepting the possibility that this was real, it was happening to me, and that what the doctor said was a real possibility. And when I opened to accept the unacceptable, my body shook for a long time, and these waves of energy went through me, and when it was finished, I was just calm. I was just quiet. It was a still space I hadn't experienced before. And suddenly, all the colors were brighter, all the sounds were sharper, all my senses were more alive. And I could see that there had been some kind of filter standing between me and the experience of life. And what that filter had been, ironically, was the fear of death. And when I was no longer afraid of death, I began to feel life. So every day I just decided to work with what I had and go out and experience being alive. At the time, my right arm was paralyzed, my legs were spastic, I was recovering from the operation, and it was an extreme time. Well, 2 months later, I thought to myself, they told me 2 months, today is 2 months. Hello, are you coming for me today? And this voice answered me and said, when the time comes, you'll know. So what do you want to do now? I thought, well, might as well go out and enjoy another hour or day, or I went to sleep at night. I didn't know I was going to wake up. Stuart talked about food. Now look, when every day is your last day and you get hungry, what do you think you eat? Whatever you want. Whatever. You don't worry about carbohydrates and carcinogens and calories. So if I wanted a hot dog, this was the most amazing hot dog the world has ever known, you know? I was telling Stuart, what I worked on was my mental diet. What I saw was that there were thoughts that brought me down and there were thoughts that picked me up. And the thoughts that brought me down were what I needed to eliminate from my diet and just put my attention on what helped me to feel good. And the thought that was running through my head a lot when I was sick was that I hadn't been paying attention. And if I asked myself what I had not been paying attention to, I had not been paying attention to whether I was happy and how important it is to be happy. So my feeling is we're here to be happy, and we lose sight of that. And in my case, my priorities shifted. So I decided I was going to live the American dream, house in the suburbs, a wife and two children, two cars in the garage, and a big dog. And what I didn't look at was, am I happy? So I realized, really, I was not. Well, 2 months after that, I was still alive. And now I was on overtime. What am I going to do with this? You know, how long can this continue? I don't know. Maybe I'll live until New Year's. If I survive until New Year's, how do I want to celebrate? I decided I would go to Club Med in Martinique. And when I got down there, well, I don't know if you've ever had some goal that you've held, something you hope you live until, and then you get to live it. It's a very exciting time. I didn't go to sleep for 3 days. Everybody else was asleep. I was wandering around and looking at the sky and the ocean and the trees and watching the dawn come up. And then I had a talk with a man who was teaching Zen meditation. And I thought, Zen monks, they know everything, right? So here's a man I want to talk to. And he looked in my eyes and he said, you have a problem. I said, yes. And he asked, what is it? I said, you know. He said, yes, please remind me. So I told him, well, it's cancer. 8 months ago, they told me I had a month or two to live. So, and he said, cancer begins in your mind. Okay, cancer begins in your mind, and that's where you can go to get rid of it. And I understood what he meant. And I saw that the cancer was the result of the stress of the lifestyle that I was living and everything I was unhappy about in my life. Well, a few weeks after that, somebody suggested I go to a talk at Silver Mind Control. How many of you know about the Silver Method? Yeah, everybody knows that, right? So I went to hear what they had to say. And what the instructor was talking about made a lot of sense to me. And she was talking about evolved beings who tell us that we each create our reality. And when the instructor said that, everybody was looking at everybody else, and I know that. Don't you know that? Yeah, everybody knows that. I didn't know that. There were about 60 people in the room, and I thought, this is common knowledge, so maybe I should just accept it as a truth. So I accepted it. Okay, it's true. I don't have time to meditate on it in a cave. And then later on, during the pause, I was listening to the people talking, and they were saying things like, she took advantage of me, he manipulated me, this happened to me. And I thought, they're not speaking in a way that reflects the idea that they create their reality. They're not taking responsibility for it. I mean, otherwise they would have to say something different. They would have to say things like, instead of he made me angry, I got angry when he did that, or I allowed myself to be manipulated, or just something different. And I had to ask myself, how would I speak differently? How would I describe the symptoms that I had experienced? Well, before I would have said I was paralyzed. So instead I would have to say I had been paralyzing myself. What did that mean? And I realized with a shock that was true. I was paralyzing myself by trying to be what I thought somebody else wanted me to be instead of being who I am. And I was holding back the real me. I was paralyzing myself, the real me. And the stress of that had reached catastrophic proportions in my body. Before, I would have said I couldn't walk. So how would I describe that from the point of view that I created it? I would have to say I was keeping myself from walking. I was keeping myself from leaving a situation that I wasn't happy in. In fact, a lot of situations. And again, the stress of that had reached catastrophic proportions in my body. So my body was saying to me, this is what you've been doing to yourself, without any further comment. The implication was, if you want something different to happen in your body, you have to do something different inside. You have to do the opposite of what the symptoms say you've been doing. So for the second part of the lecture, I paid particular attention. So what do we do with this now? And the instructor was explaining about alpha, going to alpha states, where you have more control over your body and where you can reprogram your human biocomputer. So I decided I was going to do that. I was going to use affirmations, visualization, positive thinking, reprogram my computer. I was working with computers, so that talked to me a lot. I understood that if you go to a relaxed place in your consciousness, if you go to alpha, and you talk to yourself for 15 minutes, three times a day, in 66 days, you can get yourself to believe anything. And then whatever you believe to be true is true. So I said, okay, this is what I've got to do. So I decided to do it. I started to work on myself. Every day I went into my relaxations, I imagined the tumor, okay, here's a layer of cells being released and my body's natural elimination system is going to take care of it. By the way, I had to learn to call it the tumor instead of my tumor. When you call something yours, you don't like to let go of it, you know, you want to own it. So at the same time that I was working on myself and just consciously making the tumor smaller, I was also doing a lot of research into Eastern traditions, into esoteric philosophy, searching in every area where I might get some answers how I had created the tumor so that I could understand how to create something different. In my visualizations every day, I imagined what would be the end result. I mean, after the healing is complete, I'm going to go to the doctor, they're going to examine me, scratch their head, and say, gee, maybe we made a mistake, there's nothing there. And so I continue to play this picture in the future, to remember the future in order to create it. Every time I ate anything, whatever it was that I ate, I had to tell myself, this food is exactly what my body needs for my healing at this time because my body is asking for it. My appetite is telling me, do this. It was a little bizarre, cheeseburgers and Coca-Cola and pork sausage. But later on, I understood when I got more into what food is about and understanding things about yin and yang. You know, I needed a lot of yang because I was using power, and I needed a lot of yin. I had a very wide yin-yang spectrum for the food that I was eating because I needed that in my consciousness. So somehow, even though I didn't know it, it was the perfect food for me to eat. But again, I was working on my mental diet and just doing what makes me happy and stopping what made me unhappy. It was a little bizarre sometimes. I would meet someone I hadn't seen in a while. Hey, Martin. How you doing? What's new? What's new? Oh, well, doctors told me I have terminal cancer. They gave me 1 or 2 months to live last year, so I might die any minute. And you? And they would, you know, twitch a little. And what was very ironic for me is that they were looking at me and feeling sorry for me. And I was looking at them and realizing, in fact, I was having a better time than them. And also realizing that some of them might be dead before me, but they didn't know it, and that was the only difference. So I developed a bit of compassion at that time. 2 months after I started working on myself, I went to the doctors, had my examination. Doctor scratched his head, said maybe we made a mistake. There's nothing there. So I started to explain I've been working on myself, but I didn't get to finish the sentence. So with what I've learned in my own healing, I was just really up and enthusiastic about it and wanting to share it with other people. And I started doing that. That was a lot more interesting than designing systems, computer systems on Wall Street. And I put together the system of healing that I'm working with now. It works with the idea, first of all, that everything starts in your consciousness, that you are totally responsible because you're the one who decides what you think, and you're the one who decides what you feel, and you're inside there, and things are happening around you, and as things are happening around you, you're choosing to respond in a certain way. You can feel good about something, you can feel bad about something, and if you make the right decisions, and if you are successful, you stay in balance. And if you make a decision that leaves you with stress in your consciousness, then this stress eventually finds itself to the physical, and you create a symptom. So the way I understand the what I call the human guidance system, you're in touch with yourself, your higher self, your inner being, higher intelligence, whatever you want to call it, through a communication vehicle that you call your intuition or your instinct. What's the difference between intuition and instinct? Men have instinct. Women have intuition. Okay. So it speaks a very simple language. Either it feels good or it doesn't. Everything else is politics, right? All the reasons why, it doesn't matter. So we're told that if you listen to this instinct or intuition, it guides you 100% accurately toward the fulfillment of your goals. But we're free. We don't have to listen. So what happens if we don't listen? We have to get the message on the next level. And the next level is your emotions. So as you're moving in the direction that doesn't feel good and the voice gets louder, you feel more and more emotions that don't feel good. And at any point, you can say, stop, look, listen. And then you can say to yourself, I should have listened to that little voice inside when it said to do that other thing. And that meant that you heard the little voice. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to say, I should have listened. So you make the right decision, you get back on track, there's a release of tension, more a feeling of aliveness, and you know you're on course again. If you still don't listen, and you continue to move in the direction of the resistance, then the next level of communication is your physical body, and you create a symptom. The symptom speaks a language. The language reflects the idea that we each create our reality. And when you describe it from that point of view, the metaphor of the symptom becomes clear. So instead of saying, I couldn't walk, I say, I've been keeping myself from walking. Instead of saying, I can't see, I'm keeping myself from seeing something. Every symptom has a message. And every symptom also, I discovered, has a way of being associated with it. So I discovered, for example, there was a cancer personality. And if I studied, what is this cancer personality? It talked to me. It said, that's me. Yeah, I agree. That's what I do. And I realized if I want to get rid of the cancer then, I have to get rid of the way of being that created it. So the process of healing implies a process of transformation. And there's another implication behind it. Every symptom, every kind of tension in the body has a way of being associated with it. Heart disease is associated with type A behavior. There's a myopic personality, a farsighted personality, a personality associated with arthritis. Every symptom has a way of being associated with it. And that way of being doesn't represent who you are. It represents what you've been doing, but not who you are. Whenever we do something, whatever it is we're doing, we give ourselves good reasons for doing it. We justify our position. We say, yeah, this is the right way because the world is like this and this is what we've got to do. But when you're healing yourself, you have to get beyond self-justification, and you have to get down to the practical aspect of what works and what doesn't work, and you have to let go of what doesn't work. Sometimes people are afraid of the process of change. They say, I don't want to become someone different, someone I'm not. But in fact, the thing that happens is you become more who you are. You let go of the way of being that doesn't work for you. And if there is a way of being that's associated with every symptom, that means there is a way of being associated with having no symptoms. And that's the real you. That's who you really are. So in the process of healing and in the process of transformation that goes along with the healing, you let go of a stressed way of being and you return to yourself. Healing is a return to who you really are. And so in that process, it's also a very gentle thing. You can just settle into yourself. There's no necessity for loud explosive releases or painful processes. It's just dropping into who you are. And dropping into who you are, I mean, how long does that take? As long as you want, right? Or as short as you want. But the possibility is that you can do it just now. Any questions so far? Okay. Yes?
You say it's written in a book, you can heal your life, which more or less means the dictionary at the back. For certain symptoms and what they are associated with. Now, would you say that was fairly accurate, or would you say everybody has a different sort of dictionary? Because if they do, it's a little bit confusing.
Louise Hay is working with the same basic philosophy that I'm working with, and that is that the cause of the symptom is in your consciousness. Her method is more about affirmations, saying, this is the belief that the symptom is talking about. Here is the affirmation that you need to get rid of it. I'm working with a different methodology, but the same philosophy. So, for example, I'm saying any symptom is stress, stress in your body. And stress in your body reflects stress in your consciousness. The stress in your consciousness is a response to something happening in your life at that time. So when somebody comes to me for healing, I ask, when did the symptom begin and what was happening in your life at that time? Because that was the situation that you responded to with stress. The part of the body that's affected is related to the reason why the person has a symptom. And in order to understand this relationship, I use the chakras. The chakras come from the Hindu system. And the chakras each represent a certain part of your consciousness. So your consciousness is everything that is possible for you to experience. And all of that is divided into seven categories. And each category is associated with one of these energy centers, chakra. Each chakra is like a solid ball of energy interpenetrating the physical body, not physical, more aspects of consciousness in the same way that the auras are aspects of consciousness. The chakras are more dense than the auras, but not as dense as the physical body. But they interact with the physical body through the nervous system and the endocrine system. In the nervous system, each chakra is associated with a group of nerves called a plexus. Each plexus controls certain parts of the body and certain functions in the body. So then we're able to associate tension in a certain part of the body with tension in a certain part of the consciousness. And then we can see what is the inner cause to the outer symptom. And we can make whatever decisions we need to make in order to release the tension.
I understand that. But say, for example, you've got one part of your body which you identified. So that particular part of the body could behave in totally opposite ways. So how do you then approach it? Like, so you could have a stiff back or a very sort of loose back, or say a very tight stomach, or you could be constantly running to the loo. You know, so how do you know? I'm asking for reason, personal reason, actually.
Okay, what is the specific condition that you want to know about?
Irritable bowel problem.
Okay, irritable.
Air in the stomach.
Irritable bowel problem and something in the stomach.
Yeah, a lot of air in the stomach. It's quite painful.
Okay. So if we're looking at the elimination system, for example, the elimination system is associated with the root chakra. The root chakra has to do with the parts of your consciousness concerning security, survival, trust, things that represent security in your life. Normally, that's money, home, job, your connection with the earth, which we call Mother Earth, your connection with your mother. So we would ask, what was happening in your life at the time this began? Now, I listen to what you describe as the symptom, and the word you use is irritable. So I would ask, what do you feel irritable about? What do you feel irritated about concerning an issue regarding money, home, job, something in the area of security? Does that say something to you? What's that?
I feel irritated about all of them.
Okay, so you're the expert in your consciousness, and you know what you feel good about, and you know what you feel bad about. So I don't work with an affirmation, but rather now you have the parameters, and you know what the issue is. And you need to not only change something in your attitude, you have to resolve something in your life. When somebody sneezes, it means it's true. Okay. Okay, because otherwise, if you're just treating a symptom and you're going back into the same irritating situation, I mean, you're going to continue to experience the effects of the irritation. Now, you've got some choices. You've got different ways you can handle the situation. Well, three that I can think of. One, you can change the situation. Make it from this to this. Two, you can change the way you look at the situation. Oh, I didn't realize it was really a good thing for me. Huh? Number three, you can leave the situation. Okay, those are your three options. And so you get to look at what makes the most sense for you to do. But the end result of it is you're going to feel better in your relationship with security. Now what happens during a healing, you come for a healing and you're feeling tense about something. You're caught in your movie. You're emotionally involved with this thing that's going on in your life. And so maybe you don't have clarity about it. Nor do you realize the relationship between what's happening in your body and what's happening in your life. So you come for healing, and whoever is healing you does booga booga, you know, and you're put in a clear space. And ideally, now from this clear space, you can look at your life through new eyes and say to yourself, look, I'm really feeling bad about the situation. I have to do something about it, one way or the other. So you have the equipment, you're still always in touch with your inner guidance system. So you always have the equipment, you always know what you need to do. You're the expert. What we do during a healing is not only to put you in a clear space, but also do what we can to release the symptom. And in releasing the symptom, we're working with energy. And in order to work with energy for a quick release of the symptom, we have to work within a different sense of cause and effect. So, for example, we've been raised within a reality of things decided for us by the laws of chemistry, the laws of physics, the laws of biology, where we're caught in physical cause and effect. And normally, through physical cause and effect, we can find a solution to problems, but sometimes not. Sometimes, as the doctors did with me, they say, I'm sorry, we don't have any answers for you. And while it sounds very profound and it stimulates a lot of thought, it doesn't give any answers. So we have to explore some other realities. And for me, I explored the reality of energy. So we're able to feel energy, we're able to direct energy, and this energy is always flowing through us. So within the reality of physical cause and effect, if somebody has a headache, they need an aspirin. And if they don't have an aspirin, they're stuck with the headache. Within the universe of energy, we can ask this person, what is this experience that you call a headache? And they say, well, it feels like pressure in my head. And so we can take one of our energy pressure valves and screw it in and watch the pressure go, and the person feels it go, and the experience that's called a headache is gone. There isn't any way to explain it in terms of physical cause and effect reality, in terms of the laws of chemistry and physics and biology. We're not breaking these laws. We're obeying different laws because energy behaves differently. Is there... Yes, is there somebody here who has something that hurts? Is there a headache here now? Somebody who can... Do you want to get rid of it quick? Yeah? Can you get up here? Okay, while she's coming up, do you have a question?
Sorry, can I interrupt for a second?
Yes.
We've got to use the mic, because otherwise nothing is recorded.
How would you explain serious childhood diseases? In young children, you have serious illnesses. Would you say that's a sort of inherited consciousness from the parents, that they're suffering? I'm in a very young age.
I'm working with the idea that everything begins in the consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and that, as I say, we're responding to situations around us, and as situations happen, we're deciding what to think and we're deciding what to feel. This isn't something that starts at a certain age. This is something that's always true for us. And so if we're looking at children, children are just short people, and they're responding to situations around them, and they're deciding what to think and they're deciding what to feel. This happens even before they're born, in fact. So I was called for a healing, a child in Florida who was born with a tumor at the base of its spine. Now, this is the part of the energy system that I associate with the connection with the mother, with Mother Earth. So I spoke with the mother and asked what was happening. She told me that the tumor began to grow in her sixth month of pregnancy. So I asked, what was happening between you and your man in your 6 months of pregnancy? She said, well, we had a terrible fight, and he left, and it looked like he wasn't coming back. And I asked, how would you feel about having a baby if he didn't come back? She said, if he didn't come back, I didn't want the baby. Now, at that time that she made that decision, the tumor started growing in the baby, even before it was born. Well, later on, the husband came back, they reconciled and decided that they wanted to have the baby. So now we're looking at this story from the baby's point of view. The baby's responding to its environment, and at that time its environment is really limited. It only feels the connection with its parents, or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, that means they don't love me. And if it does, then they do love me. So here's the baby saying, look, first you say you love me, then you say you don't, then you say you do, make up your mind. And if you really love me and you want me to be here, I'll be here. And if not, I don't want to be here. So the end of the story is a happy ending. A lot of love and attention and energy came, and the baby wound up being healed. But this is even before the baby was born. It was responding to the environment between the parents. Are you a mother? Do you have a child?
Yes.
So, I'm a father. I have a new baby. He's 1.5 years old. And so, well, you know, kids are a trip. And we see.
I won't blame myself now.
It's not about you. It's not about you, and it's not about what you do. It's about how the baby responds to what you do. So you can have two children in the same house with the same parents, treating them the same way, and one child develops a symptom and the other one doesn't, because they have different sensitivities. And the insight that we can have is understanding that the child is stressed about something. And if we can understand what they're stressed about, we can do something about it. But, I mean, look, feeling guilty and beating ourselves up doesn't do anything.
It's tough when they're like 2 or 3.
Mine is 1.5, yeah. I know, yeah.
to ask them what they're stressed about.
Okay, so where do you feel this, what does it feel like?
It's sort of stabbing pains.
Stabbing pains? My goodness, how violent. Okay, just close your eyes. Would you just open your hands? There we go. Open your eyes. Does that feel the same or different?
It's different.
What's different?
It feels much lighter.
How much lighter?
A lot lighter. I don't know how to measure it, but it's just my head feels like it's
okay, longer. Is it gone from both sides or?
Yes.
Yes, good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, quick and easy. As I say, there's no way to explain how it works in terms of the laws that we understand, but if we can understand that we're each an energy system and function according to that reality, and being able to feel energy and direct energy, it allows us to solve problems. So we use this to release the symptom. But releasing the symptom for us is not enough. What is important is also to communicate what was the message behind the symptom. So if I'm looking at why you had tension in your temples, these are the nerves that are associated with the brow chakra. The brow chakra is the home of your spirit, who you are inside the body. The level of being that people call the unconscious or the subconscious, but it's the real you. And when there's tension there, it's a sense of not feeling seen for who you are, but rather for the role that you're in.
Well, that eye is so I'm
we need the mic. We need the mic.
I also I can see things near me, but I can't see. So I can't see the writing on your flip chart, for example. So I don't know if that makes me long-sighted or short-sighted.
Short-sighted.
Would that be the same thing? Is that all part of the same thing? Is that part of the same chakra?
I'll explain it. In fact, the state of vision, the state of your eyesight, is related to your solar plexus chakra. Your solar plexus chakra is about ease of being. It's about power, control, and freedom. When you're nearsighted, you have to bring something closer to look at it. So the direction of attention is towards the inside or away from the outside. There's a sense of contracting, of hiding inside, of not feeling comfortable to show something. It's looking at the world through an emotional perceptual filter of insecurity or fear. So in a way it's related. If you're sensitive about showing who you are and then you feel bad because you're not seen for who you are, well, you've got the means to do something about it. Okay. You're welcome. Okay. Mike.
I was going to ask for myself how one would reframe pain. Like, I have pain, and then the thought came to me that I have to say, I am a pain.
No.
So, okay. So maybe, yeah.
When I was working on myself, as I say, I was talking to myself a lot. Sometimes it's the only way to have an intelligent conversation, I like to say. So I was saying every day and every way I'm getting better and better and na 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 na. And then at the same time I was thinking, what's going to happen when I die and my kids aren't going to be. And I realized at one point I still saw myself in a period of deterioration. I had been feeling electric shocks moving up and down my spine and out to my fingertips and toes when I moved my head in a certain way. And every time I felt that, I was saying to myself, this is the tumor, it's getting bigger, maybe I'm about to die right now. Okay, they're strong shocks. They had been working on my spinal cord, and it's the trunk line to the whole body. So when I realized that I still saw myself in a process of deterioration, if I was serious about being healed, I was going to have to see myself in a period of improvement. So I was going to have to change direction. How long does it take to change a direction? Right? Real, just an instant. And when might that instant happen? Might happen any time. So I decided, let it be now. From this moment, I'm in a state of improvement, and now I have to look at everything that I experience as evident, as evidence of that improvement. I have to maintain the integrity of this decision. And then I felt another shock, same sensation. And now I had to say, I had to see it as something good. So first I said, good, and then looked around for how it was good. Then I could say, this is energy working on the tumor, shrinking it. So if this is something that's healing me, rather than resisting it, I welcome it in. Give me all you've got now. And I just opened up for it totally. And well, it all went through me and I was still alive. So I said, okay, good. This is still evident that something good is happening. Over a period of time, the shocks became less and less strong. And I use that as evidence that I was in a state of improvement. So if we're looking at a universe of energy, we can only say it's energy. And what are we experiencing as pain? We're experiencing resistance to the flow of energy. And so if we remove the resistance and open up to the sensation, we can use it. Now, I also work with the idea pain is a signal that something is wrong.
Can I say something?
Yes.
I have a spinal cord tumor. But I think from what you said so far is that I've not really managed to cope with the fear. It's what you described first. And so that every pain and symptom increases the fear. And as you're talking, I was thinking, you know, I could talk to myself in the way that you're saying, but I wouldn't believe myself.
That's the important part. When you're using affirmations or visualization, it's like you're talking to a deeper part of yourself, and you have to get the other part of yourself to be open to that communication and even to agree with it. Have you been working with your mind at all?
I've been working with that emotional basis of the disease.
Okay.
Doing processes that locate traumas in the body and then works them through.
In the way your consciousness works with pictures. And the pictures that you put in your head have a tendency to happen. So you have to choose which pictures to put in your head. Now, so far, the picture that you've been putting in your head has been one that's been creating fear, that maybe you're going to die. Well, most people die.
I think paraplegia might be worse.
Well, that's only a step along the way. I had to deal with that too. When you have this picture and you're looking at that and saying, I don't want that to happen to me, you're energizing the picture. And the fear of that picture is the glue that holds you to that picture. And so you need to release the glue. And one way to do that is emotionally accept the possibility it might happen. When you do that, because it might happen, then you can put your attention on the picture that you want instead of on the picture that you don't want.
I can see that, because once I used to be very, very afraid of flying, terrified. And as I went to Australia quite often, you know, that would be sort of like a day of terror. And once I decided to spend the whole flight imagining crashing, and I got so bored with it, and I've never been frightened again. So I can see it worked for that.
Exactly. So do the same thing with the tumor.
And I can also see that, you know, that one can choose to look for the good, but it's difficult to do that when you have quite severe pain.
Yes, well, I had quite severe pain too. But as I say, you have to find something to do with it to remove the resistance from it and then release it. So create the positive picture first. Decide you're in a state of improvement. Do whatever it feels that you need to do along the way of your improvement process. And then use everything, everything. Whatever you eat, you decide this is what my body is asking for, and so this is the perfect food for me to eat. Whenever you go to the toilet, okay, I'm releasing cancer cells. This is all the waste products my body does. Just use everything, everything that you experience. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions so far?
Making sure it's on. Oh, good. When I was about 12, I developed bulimia and had it for many, many years, and it just gradually subsided in my 20s, just because it got more difficult to carry on, and you know, the whole cycle really. But what still carries on, and I'm 32 now, is the same physicality, holding on to weight, for example, not feeling so bad about it anymore, but. Still abusing with food, giving in to that whole chemical reaction to sugar, and on and on. And I just wondered what you would relate that to.
When I'm thinking of bulimia, bulimia is, it's considered a food disorder. And the chakra that's associated with food is the second chakra. But here, the second chakra is functioning well. You've got an appetite. The problem with bulimia, if I understand what you experience, is you reject the food afterwards. So there's tension in the solar plexus that rejects the nourishment from the food. That's not the problem. The problem is what you describe as putting on weight. And there's a reason why you put on weight. Normally, when people put on weight, they feel very sensitive about it. Well, normally. I shouldn't say normally, but often. They feel very sensitive about intimate contact because of their weight or about their love life. And that's what it's designed to do. So you would have to take a look at sensitivities in your consciousness in the areas of sexuality or in the areas of relationships, because those are what are stimulating you to put on weight. Will you hand the mic back? Yes.
Okay, I'd like to respond to what the lady was saying in the red with the blonde hair. And I was thinking that what you were saying, actually, that there's quite a strong degree of good sense in it, because in one way, I see that what you're saying is, you know, when do you make the change? You make it like that. But having had a period of my life when I was in therapy, I know very well that my therapist would say that sometimes making a decision like that is almost like an agreement to be blind. It's almost like saying, oh, well, I've done it. And no, really you haven't, because what you have to do is take account of the force of the negative as well as the positive, and it's then, in a process of integration, it's after that that you've actually really made the move, and it's not just a surface belief or a form of blindness in that you're thinking, right, I will decide to be positive, this is positive, and I will blind myself to the very real force that it's not going to be perhaps that simple, if it's going to be real. And I think that okay, you're talking about a case which was, in your own case, which was quite remarkable, and you did that.
Yeah.
But in a sense, what I think is important is that, in a sense, somebody who's saying, you know, there is pain and it is very real, doesn't feel they haven't quite reached a right stage where they can that, because actually they're working with a very great reality.
Otherwise
you get onto situations.
Please. You're working with a psychotherapy model. A psychotherapy model is different from a healing model. And within the model of healing that I use, if you really want to be healed, you want to be healed now. And you can get in touch with every part of your consciousness. Psychology is a wonderful field of study. I was a psychology major in school. My undergraduate degree is in psychology. And psychology is a study of behavior. And by its nature, it's long and slow and uncertain. And what I'm working with now is healing. And when someone is terminally ill and dealing with issues of life and death, and they've been getting sicker every day, they don't have time for this. So they have to get into a different way to work. It's a different paradigm. It's a different reality.
Yeah, I understand that. But I think what you're saying as a response in they don't have time for that, well, because you don't have time, you don't necessarily, doesn't mean you can just abandon any other form of intuition. It's not just reason, it's the whole lot. It's as if it isn't an argument.
How can you argue with success?
Well, you could ask that of many people. I don't think that is an. I don't think that is an argument.
Okay.
And I think it
I'm sharing my experiences, and my experiences have told me this is what worked for me. That's all I'm talking
I've
about.
I've had experiences of healing.
If there's something else that works for you, that's fine.
We're here for Martin's lecture. Can we move on there?
Yes, please.
Yes.
It's true.
Yes.
What about asthma?
Asthma. Each chakra is associated with an element. So the root chakra is earth, second chakra is water, third chakra is fire, and the element of air is associated with the heart chakra. The heart chakra is about the area of relationships and your perceptions of love. So we take a look at the effect of asthma and its difficulty to take the air in. And we say that a person's relationship with air is like their relationship with love. So we would look at what was happening in your life, if it's you, at the time the asthma began, and your response to the situation was to feel not loved. And so you just need to, again, open up to the love and feel it coming in. Thank you.
With the personal work you've done on yourself.
I'm sorry.
The personal work that you've done on yourself.
Yes.
When you were healing, and you're saying that you want healing now. I'm sure that you must have gone through tremendous pain, which you haven't actually mentioned.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's what seems to be overlooked. You haven't. I mean, I'm not saying it because you can have healing now, but it is an extremely painful process, and you are prepared.
Doesn't have to be a painful process. I went through a lot of pain,
yeah.
And I worked on myself in a particular way.
Yeah.
I just worked inside myself alone,
yeah.
And working with my mind and beliefs and affirmation, visualization, positive thinking, and it took me 2 months.
Mm.
But I've learned something since then, and I've gone deeper. And for myself, I'm working as a healer, and if somebody comes to me for a healing, I have to look at my perceptions, and I have to ask myself, how much do I expect this person to be healed now? Because my perceptions are creating my reality. And if I'm going to say to this person, you're going to need 6 sessions or 8 sessions or 10 sessions, I'm telling this person, you're not going to be healed now.
Mm.
And I don't expect this person to be healed now. So I'm working with the idea that beings that we consider evas, we're unlimited. We have no limits.
Yeah.
So the idea that things take time is a limiting idea. It's a limiting concept, and therefore, by its nature, invalid. And we can replace it with another idea that more reflects who we really are and what we're really capable of. While we're all unlimited beings, we're not living an unlimited life because we limit ourselves by our thoughts, we limit ourselves by our habits of speaking, our habits of relating, the way people say, he made me angry. They give away their power to be angry to somebody else. And every time you use the word can't, you're reinforcing the idea of a limit. There's something that you can't do. So in the work that I'm doing as a healer, my intention is to be able to heal this person here and now. I want to perfect the one visit healing. And sometimes it happens like that. And sometimes it needs more than one visit. But I have to start with the intention, I want to see this person healed now. And I want to create in that person the same sense of expectancy so that when they come in to sit down, they really expect to get up well and whole. And when that happens, I know that they have created it and I have created it. It's a co-creation. And when I'm approaching the healing with that intention, and it doesn't happen, then I have to look at what was going on in the other person's consciousness. What was the resistance there? Was it a limiting idea that things must take time, or was it difficulty to let go of the benefits of the symptom, or was it difficulty to let go of some attitude, whether it's grief or pain? But the potential is that the healing can happen here and now. It's just changing your mind. With Kirlian photography, we take a look at the relationship between the consciousness and the energy field and the body. If you take a Killian photograph of your hand, it'll show a pattern of energy around it. Now, if you take a second Killian photograph while you're imagining sending love and energy to somebody, it's going to show a different pattern of energy. So what are they taking a picture of? It's not about your hand. It's about what's happening in your consciousness. And we see a change in consciousness creates a change in the energy field. We also see that they've quantified this energy field. So when there's a hole in this place in the energy field, they say that corresponds to a weakness in a specific part of the physical body. The interesting thing is that this shows up in the energy field before there's ever any evidence of it on the physical level. So we put this together, and we see a change in consciousness creates a change in the energy field. A change in the energy field happens before a change in the physical body. So we have the direction of manifestation from consciousness to the energy field to the physical body. And when we look at things in this way, we see it's not the physical body creating the aura, it's the aura creating the physical body. And what we see is the physical body is the end result of a process that begins with our consciousness. A person makes a decision, it affects their energy field in a certain way, they immediately have a symptom. What that means is they can just make a different decision, and that's going to change the energy field in another way, and they'll just release the symptom, and it can happen instantaneously, no kind of process. When we start talking about subconscious and unconscious, we're creating a belief that we don't know what we're doing, that our real motivations are buried in some ocean that's inaccessible to us, and maybe if we're lucky, we can find out what it is. It's inherent in the words that we're using to describe this level of our being. So I don't use this word. I call it the spirit. It's the deeper part of our being. It's who we really are, and it's the part of our consciousness that directs our life. And because we can see it like that, we can make it visible. We can say, hey, you know, this is the result of some decision I've made, either an emotional decision or an intellectual decision, but I made a decision, and now I can see the effects of it. So we can see the effects of it in the body, and we can see the effects of it in our lives. I don't know how many of you can relate to one day you're in a terrible relationship, you know, and one day you say to yourself, this is it, I just don't want to handle this anymore, this is enough, enough, enough. And 5 minutes later you forgot about it. And the next day your partner says, well, I'm leaving. And all of a sudden you're dealing with your attachments, oh baby, don't go, I love you so much. But they're carrying out what you've decided. Okay, but we say, well, you had a subconscious desire that they should, subconscious, unconscious, at one point it was really conscious, right? And then it went back into that ocean. So we have a chance to forget about it. So I like to make it visible. Yes.
Would you go as far as saying then that we collectively limit ourselves by believing the deterioration that happens, say, after menopause or old age is inevitable, like reading blur, bones getting brittle, those sort of things? Or would you say that even that is just a collective misunderstanding of how we're limiting ourselves, and it could be overcome in every individual if they freed themselves of it?
I believe that we're each free, and we can get to decide anything we want, and we can get to believe anything we want, and whatever we believe to be true is true.
But it might be harder because the collective belief holds so firm.
I didn't say it was easy. I mean, look, we're each an individual, and we decide what to think, and we decide what to feel, we decide what to believe, and while we feel that all of this is our individual decisions, still, we have to work as well with a group consciousness. So here we are, we're in London, we're in England. English people think a certain way. French people think a different way. German people a different way. So there are certain symptoms that run higher in certain countries because there's a different way of thinking. Now, if the way of thinking in the society, in the group consciousness, predisposes it to a symptom, you can ask yourself, have I bought into this consciousness? Have I agreed with this group consciousness? If I have accepted a limiting idea, I don't have to keep it. I can choose now to release it. Yes, that's true of you, but that's not true of me. We have to work here with an idea of alternative realities. It's not one thing called reality. There's nothing that is universally true. There is just what is true for you. And what is true for you may be different than what is true for somebody else. So in my classes, for example, I talk about our perceptions create our reality. And here's a bubble, here's a reality where somebody wants to become thinner. And what do they have to think about? And in this reality, they say, how much you weigh doesn't depend upon the calories. It depends upon the carbohydrates, because calories are consumed immediately, but carbohydrates, they're stored in the body as fat. Grapefruit is high in carbohydrates. So in this reality, if you eat grapefruit, you're going to get fat. It's true. In this reality, if you eat grapefruit, you're going to get thin. And experts in both areas will prove they're right. So you go to the supermarket, and you get a grapefruit. You on the grapefruit. No books, no experts. What's going to happen? Depends on what you believe is going to happen. And if you believe you will get fat, you will. And if you believe you will get thin, you will. And if you don't know what's going to happen, you have to eat the grapefruit and find out. Then you can say, this is my truth, this is my reality. But again, something different can be true for somebody else. And something, they can respond in a different way to the same conditions because they believe something different. So your beliefs color your perceptions. Your beliefs color your bubble. So you're going to look for evidence that what you say is right. And it is right. It's right for you. But something different can be true for somebody else.
To ask, I wasn't quite sure if you could clarify. When you have students, when you have workshops, etc., etc., are you teaching people to think as you do in terms of the self-healing, or are you teaching other people to think as you do as the healer? Do you see what I mean? Are they teaching themselves to heal themselves, or are you educating people to go out and do what you do as the healer when you give healing to other people?
I'm teaching people to go out and do what I do as the healer. But the model that we're using is one that some people use for self-healing in terms of understanding their own body-mind relationship. Okay, you want to understand the relationship between what's happening in your body and the decisions that you have made. And in the way I worked, I had to work inside myself. And when you're working in that way, I would say it demands more clarity, because you may not allow yourself the luxury of attachments and things like that, okay? So when you're working with a healer, it gives you an easier way out. You're the expert in your consciousness, and you know what's going on, what you feel good about, what you feel bad about. So now you come for healing, and I'm looking inside you, and I'm seeing what you show me about what you need to return to balance. So then I give you the feedback. I say, well, according to what I see, this is what's going on, and I'm not teaching you anything. I'm reminding you of something that you know. So it gives you a way out of being caught subjective. See, it's true. Gives you a way out of being caught subjectively in your movie. It helps giving you the clarity. So during the classes, I'm teaching people how to feel energy, how to direct energy, the different associations with the chakras, with the parts of the body, the parts of the consciousness, how to use thought forms to take things out like that. And with each tool that I give the people, they heal each other. So during an experience, you're going to give 6 healings. You're going to receive 6 healings. Now, when you're working with a healer, here's your view of you, and here's the healer's view of you. And maybe they're telling you something you think, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. I don't know. It's just one person's opinion. They're seeing me through their filter. But when you're working with 6 healers, and they all give you the same story, then you've got a pretty good fix. It's a hard thing to escape with the attachments. You have to acknowledge something is going on there, and have to look at it. So that makes it easier to release it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Intense energy in here. Yes.
There were sort of two points that I wanted to make. The first one was going back to what Staley was referring to. I just wanted to say that I think very often one holds onto negative beliefs and resistance because you're gaining something from it. You're justifying that you are ill and there's a reason because you had a lousy past and it makes you feel that that's okay. You can be ill and you can just take time to heal yourself. And the other thing that I wanted to say was how, when you found out something like you have a problem with relationships, you've worked back to that, where do you go from there? What sort of, do you suggest sort of counseling or?
I want to find the way to change my mind now, you know? So one thing that helps that is in the way that we're using language. When you define yourself, when you describe yourself, you define yourself. I'm a person who has difficulty in relationship. And you make that part of your definition of who you are right now. But it has nothing to do with who you are right now. It has to do with who you have been in the past. And when you describe it as having been true in the past, you leave a door open for something different to be true here. So you begin by having different patterns of speech.
Yeah.
And you have to ask yourself, if my words are creative and I'm creating reality now, mm-hmm. let me listen to my words and ask myself, is this something I want to carry into the future? And if not, let me describe it as having been true in the past. Then maybe it's still true, but maybe it's not. Okay, so it immediately helps to release the identification with the pattern of being. And in terms of relationships, when somebody's having a difficult relationship, there's something being carried at the level of the heart chakra. There's some kind of protection, some kind of a shell, some kind of sensitivity, or some kind of emotion. So it's a question of how we can just release that quickly. And we can release that quickly by just sending love into the person's heart chakra. Yeah. Connect your heart chakra as the healer mm-hmm. with the person's heart chakra as the healee. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, they know they have the ability to open to the love that's there because they've done it with you. So now they have a different picture of themselves. Now they go out and they can decide, let me look at my relationship. And instead of looking for evidence that the love is there, let me feel it. Because most people don't feel it. Most people look for evidence. Show me you love me by doing this. He loves me because he did that. You know, it's a mental process. So when you're able to feel it, you say, okay, I feel it now. I feel my connectedness with this person. And in my own experience, I say, I have to not only love this person, I want to ask myself, how much time am I spending in my relationship feeling this love? Because I've had some crazy relationships in the past where I would say for long periods of time, days, weeks, months, I didn't feel the love with the person that I knew was there. I was just feeling a lot of other stuff. So now I want to ask myself, how much of my day can I spend feeling my sense of connectedness with this person? And then if something comes in the way of that, I know I have homework. I know I have to do something so I can get back to this love.
Do you talk with them, I thought?
Mike.
Sorry.
Can we have the mic? It's a quick question.
Yeah. The quick one was just about asthma.
I'll come back to asthma.
Okay. Do you talk with the person that you are trying to heal and love with them, or do you do it on a solo basis?
In my personal relationship.
How is the way to do that?
I have to take responsibility for me. I have to take responsibility for what I feel good about, what I feel bad about. So I have to work with the idea, this person is free to be themselves, and I'm free to feel about it however I want. And if I'm feeling resistance, I've got to take responsibility for it and take a look at what's going on there. It's not about what they're doing. It's about what I'm feeling. Okay, so in that sense, I'm handling at least most of it myself. If there's a misunderstanding, then I have to have a communication with this person, because each one of us, we're in our own little universe, you know, and while it's true we're all psychic and we're all really aware of what's going on, it's not always on a conscious level. So sometimes we think we know something about this person, we think something's going on, and it may be a misunderstanding. So I can express, my perception is this, is that your experience? And the other person can say, yes, that's my experience, or no, in fact, this is what's going on for me. So the communication for me in a relationship is essential, essential to eliminate the misunderstandings. Okay. I want to talk about asthma. Okay, I talked about asthma before. It's what do you want to know about that?
Is to do with little children, which you touched on earlier as well. Because my godson has asthma, he's 3, his mother also has asthma, and I know that in her 7th month of pregnancy, her husband revealed that his mistress was having a baby, and she said what she felt, she went to the doctor, started to go into labor, and felt, I take this baby out now, I don't want it. But how would a mother in this situation, she's a single mother, help a 3-year-old who has asthma and all the associated things you talked about, help this child?
The baby is working with the perception it's not loved. I would say at this point, this woman no longer feels the resentment she was feeling then. She feels love for the baby. So let her connect her heart with the baby's heart. You can do that simply, you can do that with a hug, you can do it with talking, to just make certain that baby knows it's loved. If the father isn't there, that's another condition that has to be dealt with. The relationship with the father is what I associate with the crown chakra. The crown chakra has to do with the parts of your consciousness concerning unity and separation. And so when there's a sense of separation from the father, the person closes the crown chakra, and immediately it's as though the person is in a shell. They feel just alone. And they don't have a sense of contact with people outside the shell. And people outside have a difficult time to reach in and make contact with this person. So I would say this is also something that's going on with the baby. The baby needs to open his or her crown chakra. The mother can do that if she's working with healing. Anybody who's working with healing can help the baby do that. Or just to find the way into the baby's world, into the baby's reality, be in there with them so that they're no longer alone. And that'll also open the crown chakra. Okay?
I just wondered 100%
woman. Okay. Right.
I was just wondering how you'd explain if a relationship or somebody you're close to has a problem, say a back problem or slip disc, and then you find that the partner also comes out in sympathy with the same problems.
The sense that's associated with the crown chakra is called empathy. Empathy is experiencing another person's experience as if it's yours. And sometimes healers have to deal with this. When they're giving a healing, they feel as if it's in them, the symptom that's in the other person. And in the way I understand this, it's a feedback system. So it's as though the person is saying to the healer, here's what I'm feeling. What can you do for me? And when the healer releases the problem in the person, they feel it release in themselves. So this is one of the more difficult aspects of empathy, but it's what gives rise to the belief that the healer takes on the symptoms of the person that they're healing. I mean, if it was like that, we wouldn't want to heal anybody with a broken arm or never work with somebody with hemorrhoids, for example. You know. So it's not that they take on the symptom, but they experience what the person is experiencing. And if they're aware of that, that what they're wearing is not them, they can take off the other person as if they would take off an overcoat and return to them, to who they really are. So in a couple, if they're really lucky, they have an experience of empathy where their consciousness is connected. It's a shared consciousness. They're functioning as a dyad rather than a monad. It's like a monad is a single point of consciousness watching the dream that it's dreaming, and a dyad is two points of consciousness watching the dream that they're both dreaming. So, very lovely experience. It's nice when that happens. Yes.
Do forgive me, all these questions have been really deep, okay, but I've had an infection in a root canal since January, okay. And it really isn't healing up, and it's now going to cost me a fortune, and I wonder, could you just give me any advice on it? I don't know what's hurting more now, paying the endodontist or the toothache.
Okay. What I associate with the root chakra also, it's interesting, root canal and root chakra, and when there's problems with the teeth, what I have found is very often it has to do with anger about work. Does that say something? Okay, okay. It talks to you.
I just haven't been able to connect it.
That's it.
Okay.
Wow, right. Yeah.
Can I just ask, when someone is taking prescribed drugs for to control the pain of a physical condition, does this affect the physical structure in such a way that perhaps healing wouldn't take place, or can healing override this?
I'm working with the idea that there is nothing that stands in the way of your returning to who you are, ever. And any other idea is putting a limit on you, and by its nature is invalid. I'm also working with the idea that nothing happening on the physical level affects your chakras. That thing wouldn't have an effect on you unless there was something already going on in your chakras. So I keep coming back to the idea that everything begins in your consciousness. I'm not a doctor, so I may not say to people anything about medicine. I may not say you should take it or shouldn't take it or anything like that. But I would say whatever the effect is in the body is reflecting something that's happening in the consciousness.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You make it sound so easy. And if you have a failure, you would put it back on the person because you'd say that it has to be in their own consciousness to heal themselves. It's rather a frightening responsibility.
It's a responsibility, and I like to work with the idea there's no such thing as failure. There's just delayed success. So if someone is having a difficult time and has not yet experienced the healing, then that's information for them. That means there's something in their consciousness they can look at and find and release. So this is within this model, okay? And yes, it's responsibility. You have to take responsibility for everything. Everything happening in your body, everything happening in your life, it all begins with some
failure. If you're terribly ill and you're told
there is no failure, just delayed success. And as somebody else mentioned, sometimes people discover that there is a payback for their symptoms, that there's a benefit to being sick. Sometimes people are paid to be sick. You know, the government pays you if you're sick. And then when a person like this comes for healing, and they're telling me this, I have to ask, what are you going to do for money, you know, then? Are you willing to go out and work? Well, I don't know, you know. So we're asking, what is the benefit? Is there something the person is getting out of being sick? Or are they playing a scenario like what I call the wounded bird routine? You walk through the forest and you find a little bird and it's got its wing broken, and you pick it up and you take it home and you give it a lot of love and a lot of attention. And then the wing is healed and you open up the window and you say goodbye, you're free. And the bird flies out. And sometimes the bird looks back and says, I haven't had so much love and so much attention my entire life. And maybe if I break my little wing again, I can get more. Okay? And so then if somebody is into this routine, you have to respond to it in a different way. As a healer, I'm working with the idea that where you put your attention, is where you're directing energy. It's like deciding what pictures you're going to put in your consciousness. And working with someone who has a symptom, you should not put your attention on the symptom, but rather on the whole person behind the symptom, and talk to that person. Insist on talking to that person. And if somebody pretends that they're too weak and they can't do it, you have to look behind that and see the whole person that's there. When you're healing somebody, you may not feel sorry for this person, because if you're feeling sorry for this person, you're energizing a symptom rather than energizing the whole person that's there.
Can I ask you a question?
I watch a mother talking to a baby, and the mother is saying, "Don't spill the water, don't spill the water," and the only picture that's in this baby's consciousness is spilling the water. And so you have to talk to the baby, have the perception, they're capable, they can do it. Watch them do it.
Hold on one sec, sorry.
Can we come back to this right after this question? This woman has the mic, yes.
Thank you. I believe in what you're saying 100%, and it's really wonderful and refreshing to hear it. I have cerebral palsy, and I know that this is all right because I've managed to get some sort of alleviations and alterations from doing exactly what you've said. However, I really would like to go the distance and get rid of the whole lot. Do you have any suggestions as to things I can do?
From what I understand about cerebral palsy, if it's something that affects the entire nervous system, mm-hmm. then it's something happening in the crown chakra.
Uh-huh.
You'd have to ask yourself what was happening in your life at the time the symptom began.
Which was before birth, and we're not sure when, and it's not very easy to find out what was happening with my mother.
No, but what was happening with your father?
Right.
Okay, because it's your connection with your father.
Fabulous.
And in terms of your way of thinking, we would take a look at what would be the effect of the symptom if it were allowed to proceed. If it were allowed to go all the way, the effect would be what? You would be totally helpless. Right?
Yes, totally helpless.
So we say you're doing to yourself literally what you've been doing to yourself figuratively. So in your consciousness, you've been making yourself helpless. You've been denying your power instead of owning and acknowledging your power. So you have to do the opposite of what the symptom says you've been doing until now.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much. Okay. Okay. I hope this can be short.
Well, I think so, because
okay.
But basically, I think that there is the connotation that, in a sense, the thing about guilt, if you're not making yourself better, and I'd like to ask you, after you said about the wounded bird thing, I don't have an illness, and my reason for undergoing therapy was to work in counselling with people who needed counselling, basically. But the point is that when you have somebody who has a severe learning disability, they're no wounded bird. Maybe when they've got to kind of be in the gym, their exercise is lying on their back when they've got a physical disability as well, and they can have very little movement. And some, not all by any means, are burning up with an anger or a sadness about it, okay. And they cannot make a conscious decision to make themselves better. When I talk about the negative, what I'm saying is, what do you say to these people?
I will answer.
Yeah.
I still have to look behind the symptom at this person that is apparently helpless and insist on seeing the whole person who is capable. I had a man in one of my classes who was brain damaged. And it was a test for me. I mean, for me, I had to say, okay, Martin, you know, you're on the spot now and you've got to put it to practice all that you've been talking about. And when he would start to go into this, I had to go behind and say, now, you stop. Now, you pay attention, because I know inside there, you're brilliant, and you can do this, so just do it. And it caught him, and he did it. And by the time we got to the end of the class, he was functioning, he was giving healings, he was great. It was difficult for his parents to own. It was difficult for them to accept, in fact, that he had come all this distance in 4 days. But that was a trip that they had to take care of. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, and you think you can work
And we can still insist on talking to the person that's behind the symptom, seeing the whole person there, and that makes it easier for them to live from that place. That's the reality with which I work.
We've got one more question and two answers.
Yes, okay. Yes.
How do you explain consistent back pain?
Consistent back pain. Mm. It depends where in the back it is.
In between the shoulders and the lower back.
In between the that's a lot of space.
No, the two spots basically. It appears in between the shoulders or in the lower back.
In between the shoulders is at the level of the heart chakra. So I would be asking what was happening in the area of relationships. And when you're saying the lower back, I'm wondering whether it's the lumbar region or the sacral region. If it's the lumbar region, then something in the area of food and sex. And if it's in the sacral region, then something in the area of security, money, home, and job. Once you can point to the part of the person's life where there's tension, where there's difficulty, then they know what they need to do. Again, it's a way of working that demands that the person takes responsibility for it. And we've not been taught to do that in our society. We've been taught, well, something happens in your body, go to the body shop and get it repaired, and hospitals are nice places for transformation. They give you a socially acceptable reason to drop out of your movie and look at things. That's what it was for me, in fact. So in working with this, we have a chance to look at what do we need to do to make our life better, because when we're happy, we're healthy.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I think that was amazing.
Thank you so much.